everybody. This is Marley with Miami Ghost Chronicles. How are you all doing today? And today I have a paranormal group out of a state that I visited like maybe a couple of weeks ago, which is Kentucky. And the name of the group is Bluegrass Ghost Chasers. And with me, I have one of the investigators. As a matter of fact, his name is Larry. Larry, are you, let me bring you on. Are you not only an investigator, are you one of the founders of the group?
Not one of the founders, but right now I'm one of the acting directors while the founder is taking a break.
Okay, perfect. So anyway, Larry, before we get into, you know, the experiences or the cases that the group has had, how did you become involved in the paranormal?
Well, like a lot of people, the stories you hear, I grew up in a house that had some activity in it. And then also, I was born the day before Halloween. So usually my birthday come around, it was, you know, ghost stories and, you know, just some from there.
Sure. So when you say you grew up in a kind of haunted house, what was happening in your house? Were you just hearing noises? Did you ever see anything?
No, never seen anything when I was young. I'd hear noises, and sometimes a hairdryer or a radio would turn on by itself. Nothing scary.
Nothing scary, but I think difficult to explain if nobody was around it, right?
Right.
Were you the only one in the house, you know, experiencing this, or was the whole family getting in on the action?
I had a brother that would experience some of it, not too much, but we, as kids, we just kind of didn't think a whole lot about it.
And what happened? You grew up and you moved away, and then what happened? Anything else? Any other experiences?
Oh, yeah. I had a pretty interesting experience when I was in the Navy going across the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, I want to hear about that.
It was just, I was doing a midnight watch, and it was about in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle heading to Cuba to do some training. And it's like 1 a.m, and then I'm on the side of the ship, and I see a flash of green light.
Okay.
And I called the other people and people on the bridge, and no one else seen it. And it didn't light up the whole sky. It's more like just a quick flash up in the front of the ship, kind of.
Okay.
And, you know, then that was it. And then I had a guy later on tell me that he says he could see ghosts, and was telling me as we was passing through the Bermuda Triangle, he seen a lot of them. He didn't go in detail, but. Yeah, so that really picked up the speed of me trying to find out what else is out there.
I bet. So here you are. It sounds like you were handling all of this, because it sounds like you really hadn't had any, like, but some people, either as kids or even as adults, sometimes have this dramatic face-to-face with a paranormal, which is like, but it sounds like you kind of, maybe since you got it, like, on the, you know, more, like you said, modest level, you were more accepting of it.
And I had a mother, my grandmother, who were believers, and they didn't say, hey, you know, that didn't happen or nothing. They, you know always there would listen, and they had their own experiences in other houses.
And you know what, that, believe it or not, I've heard from so many different guests who have had experiences when they're kids, and their family is either tells them, blows them off, or like basically shames them into not ever talking about it again.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes they're so scared themselves that it's like, we'll just pretend that that doesn't, you know, that doesn't happen, and let's leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and I didn't get kind of negativity or nothing from anybody in my family, really.
That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. So here you are, you grew up, and then what, you decided, hey, I wanna do investigations, and you joined the team, or how did that work out?
Yeah, at first I started back about right around 2000, maybe 99. I joined, it was like a ghost hunters, not really a club, but it was a big thing where you'd get names of other groups in different states. And I was traveling for work at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I was going to a state. I'd look up a group there and be able to hang with them, or
okay,
if they had anything, go on investigation with them. So I did for for a long time, just kind of like a rogue ghost hunter. And I know you hear a lot about paranormal drama, people not working together. I've always had groups that would, you know, let me tag along and stuff like that. So I've never really had the paradrama, they call it. I've always found people that were very inviting and willing to teach you. Yes.
Yeah, and I've done that where I called myself a freelance investigator, where basically it was, I was a group unto myself, and I would just participate with my sometimes other groups, depending on, especially if it was down towards where I lived. And like everything, after a while, you get to know people, and people get to know you. And if you're, you know, if you're reliable, and you know, you're friendly and professional, you get, you know, you get looked up, because not, you know, sometimes those are things that a lot of groups, you know, need to look into when they, you know, have people come into an investigation with them. I was, as I said earlier, I was there in Lexington a couple of weeks ago for Scarefest. Yeah. And I saw so many places that I would have loved, to go investigate. I was like, about the closest thing I got to was I went over to the Lexington National Cemetery, and that was it. And but I mean, there's old Louisville. There were so many places that I would have thought, my God, this is, I would love to just do some exploring and investigation. Do you guys do historic sites, or do you do only like, you know, a person's home?
We try to do a little bit of everything. More, we try to concentrate more on residential and helping people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we will go to historical places, you know, Waverly or, you know, just, I mean, there's a lot of historical places around, battlegrounds, old forts.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So we like to do them too.
Let me ask you, for example, have you been to Waverly?
Yes.
And what was your experience? I mean, I know that it's got a reputation of being haunted, which is, to me, it's no mystery that absolutely, because just of what happened there. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I know, for example, that the supernatural is not an on-demand thing. You know, you can go as a group, and sometimes you have experiences, and sometimes you don't, or sometimes you have stuff that's like really in your face. And then other times it's just like a noise down the hallway. What happened when you guys went there?
Well, me personally, hate to disappoint you, but I didn't have a whole lot of personal experiences with me. And, you know, a lot of people did. They had a lot of spirit box interaction, answering their questions. I mean, I wasn't with them. This is stories they was telling me. I did have one in the death tunnels where we was walking up to the entrance, and, you know, it goes really far down, and I thought another group, you know, a group of people was down there, because we heard talking.
Okay.
And so we was just waiting, and I was like, you know, about 15 minutes later, we still hear whispering. I said, well, all right, they had their time, let's go on down there. So we walked down there, trying nice and quiet, so we, you know, doing an EVP session, we didn't want to disturb them.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the bottom, was nobody there. So,
wow.
Yes. I mean, that was interesting. I was really mad because we wasted time, but it was cool to have that little personal experience.
But see, that's great. I love that because, yeah, even though you were ghost hunting, like you said, you were thinking it's another group in there. So the beginning, you're not thinking, okay, hey, we're getting something. You're like, oh, okay, all right, well, it's our turn now. Thanks. Which it's like, and that's what happens, you know, with the most convincing supernatural experiences is when at the beginning you're thinking it's something rational or explainable. You're not thinking paranormal or whatever. And then when you realize it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. By the time that you realize it was, you know, it's something different, you're not really even spooked anymore. You're more what it have been, yeah.
But still, that is a good story. Because in a place where, and that's what I'm saying, sometimes even when you go in there with different types of equipment or whatever, the experiences, they kind of like come out of left field when you're not really. And I mean, myself as an investigator, I've heard of other investigators that have had experiences when they don't have their equipment running, when they're just doing something and they're not really prepared to capture anything. And then it happens and it's like, hey, my word's going to have to suffice because, but. As far as getting convinced on your own, it's for yourself. Like you said, it's like, okay, well, who was making that noise in that death tunnel.
Yeah.
So absolutely. And I'm going to back up a minute and I'm going to ask you, Larry, because my son was in the Navy. And okay. I know that sailors sometimes have a lot of superstitions and stories that they tell amongst themselves. Okay. Did you ever have experiences like that or hear of any stories when you were in the Navy?
No.
No, really?
Not really, no superstitions. I guess not really.
Okay. Because my son, yeah. You know, he had told me of a few, and some of them you kind of think, okay, this falls like into the urban myth kind of category. You know how it's been retold so many times that by the time it's told, it's like what the original version was. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
But so then what happened? You went to Waverly. Have you guys gone to any of the historic homes over there in Old Louisville? Because I know they have like a district, which I believe they call Millionaire's Row.
I have not been. I can't speak for the rest of the group, but okay. I personally have not been over there.
Okay.
And some places like that, you know, it's hard to get into do an investigation unless they, you know, maybe a ghost walk or something. You can carry something in there. Some of the places are really hard to get in.
Yes, I know that. For a fact that, in that case, I know a lot of them are private homes, you know, just because they're older private homes and not everybody's going to be like, yeah, come on. And even when you have, a person have you come in and do an investigation, there's still like confidentiality, like, please don't put my name out there.
Right.
And, you know, and some historic sites, even nowadays, if you want to go in there as a group, sometimes they charge you accordingly. It's like, it depends on the location.
Yeah. Everybody does anymore. Yeah. Do it because, you know, they got to pay to have someone there with you, like security, you know, like a port rod, you know, they'll do it. But yeah, everybody's going to charge. And most of the time, when they do charge you, it's going to, you know, upkeep and you know, help keep the place going.
Oh, so, sure. Especially if you're there after hours or anything like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, if it ain't, like, you know, up in the thousands, you know, it's good to pay because it helps keep them places going and looking good and fixing them up.
Sure. And, you know, and a lot of them, if they're, you know, if there's some type of, like, a landmark, like a national landmark or anything, you know, they always have a budget. Absolutely, that's understandable. But what I'm saying, as far as your regular, you know, ghost groups, you know, everybody's on a budget themselves, so that's why I'm saying that, you know, sometimes it becomes a choice of where to investigate. So I know you, like you said, you haven't been to all the investigations. Of the investigations that you've done, what have been either the most interesting one or that you had an experience or saw something or heard something that you yourself were like, you know, I cannot explain this?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few. I think the one that stands out in my mind is an old powerhouse. It's part of the dam in Tennessee. Hale's Bar and Dam is what it's called.
Okay.
Well, they blew up the dam because they rebuilt it and blew the other one, but the powerhouse is still there. And we was in the tunnels, I guess it was the maintenance tunnel where they moved stuff back and forth. Well, I was there about 6 in the morning, just getting light. And at the very far end, there's an old wooden door. They don't use it anymore, but it was there. So the light just started coming in.
Okay.
So I'm at the other end. It's dark, but you can just barely see the light down there. Well, as we was walking down there, we started getting a little hits on our K2 meter, which there's no electricity there. So, you know, we was pretty excited. So as we're walking down closer, I don't know if you heard, a lot of people heard, that the dark... darkness gets darker.
Yes.
And I always thought, well, you know, how can that be? Well, the dark started getting darker, and it was like moving from the tunnel up towards us from that door.
Wow.
And as it got to us, it was like a blanket of darkness would just wrap around us.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I was looking down there, I seen a figure. I pretty much could see from the chest down and a right arm, but you see him take 2 steps across the tunnel and was gone. And then that was, and still right now, and that's been about 5 years ago, but I can still, in my mind, picture it. It was really.
And I know exactly what you mean. When you witness something And no matter how long has gone by, it's still very, very fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like, you know, when we have memories, good and bad ones, that you
yeah.
just can't erase or they never become dull. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the kind of stuff that while you're seeing it, there's a part of your brain that's saying, are you really seeing what you think you're seeing?
Yeah.
You know, like,
right.
because like you said, I'm seeing something that's darker than what I thought was dark. And now all of a sudden I'm seeing what I think looks like part of a human body. And like you said, the gestures of, you know, your arm, you know, when a person walks.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's what we think about when you have an experience like that. If you can really recall it years later, that, you know, it probably really did happen. Because,
yes.
you know, if the memory gets fuzzy and stuff, you kind of think, well, okay, maybe it really didn't happen. But if it's just stuck with you like that, believe yes. Yeah.
Yes. Had anybody ever reported or a similar sighting to that one as to who they could identify who they thought it was?
I think it was an old maintenance man that they seen a lot there. I can't recall the name.
Yes.
But yeah, there was like a maintenance man that they'd seen all the time there. I think he committed suicide there.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, not in the tunnels, but pretty close to the tunnels. Of course, you know, they ain't got to be in there. I think they roam around anyway.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you. I agree with you. And I mean, I've even heard, you know, every time that I hear about, you know, that it's a person that either worked there or did maintenance, and they'll say, well, but he died at home and whatever. And I said, you know what? Some people, their work, their job is their end all be all in a way, even if they
right.
didn't die tragically or commit suicide. In other words, they probably maybe even spend more time at work. And for all you know, this is where this guy felt happy. Maybe, you
yeah.
know,
maybe so, that's all he had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, they go back to not home. They go back to where they work because this, whether they felt useful, whether they felt protective or ownership of the place. I hear that all the time. I said, yeah, that makes sense. You might not see this person at home, but you sure should do see him where he worked at. And every once in a while, then you get lucky enough and you catch somebody, you know, like you did. But that's fantastic because you actually saw something with your eyes, and not everybody is that lucky. They'll hear things or they'll, you know, they'll experience either touching or the temperature drop. But to actually see something, that is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, after all these years, that's really the only time. I think I've seen some shadow play, but really an apparition, that's the only time. So I was really happy I seen that.
Let me ask something, Larry, because everybody always asks me, and I always ask everybody that I interview, have you had situations where after you've done an investigation, you start having experiences at home or something, what I call something follows you home?
Yes. Yes, I did. I did something in Savannah one weekend, and I was actually working down there, and I think I was doing went through one of the parks down there, the square.
Yes.
And Savannah's haunted. Mm-hmm. But we just moved into a new house. And matter of fact, I had a friend there, and I'll bring him in a second with him. But anyway, when I come back for the weekend at home, and stuff started happening there. And a friend of mine I was working with lived a couple miles from me, and stuff started happening at his house. Because, you know, staying in the same hotel down there, and I was, you know, listening to audio with him, and he went with me just, you know, playing around. So, yeah, both of us actually started having stuff happen at our houses. Nothing physical or anything. A lot of, you know, whispering,
yes,
footsteps, you know, stuff like that. So it was interesting. Yes, it has happened.
And what happened? Did it eventually what, just die away?
Yeah, eventually it just kind of, you know, I told him, hey, you know, you need to go back, you know, where you come from. And, you know, if you want to be here, you got to, you know, do stuff during the day when we're not here.
Not
eventually, yeah, it just kind of stopped, except for my poor friend. He'd had a lot of stuff. We actually had to go investigate his house and do a cleansing on it. We don't do cleansing, but had someone go in and cleanse it. Yeah, it finally, I think they got the bad stuff over there that would actually mess with the shades and stuff. Yeah, it was terrible.
And after the investigation, Was it something that he had there before, or did you guys verify that it was something that he had just picked up?
Well, we really couldn't verify, but he'd been living in that place for 4 years and nothing.
Okay, yeah, that's a good sign.
I just found it odd and really, you know, no coincidences that it started at my house and his house after we did a little something in Savannah. So, yeah.
Or maybe once you kicked them out, they said, okay, everybody over there to this other guy's house.
Yeah.
And you know what, Larry, people underestimate that method, how effective it is. People give up, you know, their what I call their ownership of their houses or their space too easily. And they think, oh, what am I going to do? Tell them to leave? I go, yeah. It's that simple sometimes. Like, get out of here.
Yeah,
you know?
It works quite a bit. Unless it's a more darker thing or something just stronger attached to something in the house. Then, yeah, that will actually, you know, make it work.
Yes. I mean, it doesn't work absolutely all the time, but something as basic, you know what they say, the basic stuff works. Yes, that is, the basic stuff does work a lot of times, especially at the very beginning when you, like you say, you start noticing, wow, that's weird. Okay. That's unusual. Okay. By the third time you realize it's not my imagination. It's not the wind or whatever. Something's going on, and you put two and two together and you realize, okay, maybe something came back with me from one of these investigations or one of these locations. And then it's as simple as saying, get out, leave. Bye. Yeah. Out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all. Sometimes it's all you need to do. And you ain't got to be rude about it.
No,
don't make them mad. It's like, my house and you got to go. And usually, and a lot of times that works. Not every time, of course, but yeah.
Of course. But it well, and the reason why I say this is that unfortunately a lot of the shows make it look like in order to get, you know, like if you ever somehow or other end up with an active or intelligent haunting, like it's a real complicated thing to get this spirit out of there. You know, you either got to call in a group or, you know, a blessing. I mean, and I go, I'm not going to say that doesn't work. And then maybe there's times where, yeah, this is what's called for. But there's other times where all you have to do is tell them very sternly with ownership, I believe it, like, this is my house and you need to leave right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And you do it. And a lot of times it works. Sometimes it don't. But try that first, you know, and before you know, get yourself all upset about it.
Try it first,
and then go. And a lot of people will wait a long time to do it. And by the time they call someone in, they're already on edge and, you know, just at their wit's end.
Well, haven't you noticed that? I don't know, as a group, once, especially when you receive calls that, when you start talking to people, like by the time they contact, let's say a group, and you ask them, well, how long has it been, you know, that you guys, and sometimes they're talking about years or you're like, really? I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I understand the other side of it, that some people, they think it's paranormal if they hear a squeak in the house. You know, that's the other extreme. That's not good either. But if you go through all the possibilities, the rational possibilities, and what you're left with is something possibly paranormal, and you've said the leaf part, then call in a group and see what happens.
And, you know, sometimes I think it takes so long because, you know, in TV they got to condense, you know, a 5 years worth in an hour. So, you know, maybe over time you start hearing a door shut, but, you know, it's three before you hear it again. But then maybe just the last few months, it ramps up so bad that you got to call someone in.
Yes. And sometimes there's a trigger going on and something in the family, something happens.
Yes.
That makes it ramp up to get, you know, from being, like you said, just a few noises or like what you experienced. Hey, the faucet started running. Oh, okay. All right. You know, nothing bad. And then something happens within the family and things all of a sudden they start getting what I call sinister.
A lot of times we see it's, you know, maybe a husband and wife are not getting along anymore and they're starting to fight. They got a child that's just running rampant, you know, not listening, misbehaving. There's a lot of stress in the house. Mm-hmm. There's already something there that absolutely will feed that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that people don't realize that even sometimes it's not even a ghost. For example, I had a case one time. This was many years ago, and this was a couple, and she was in her 20s, and when we went in there, one of the things was that we were saying that things were moving. So I take her aside and I'm interviewing her, and she's telling me how, sometimes she would have dishes inside the sink and they would start to like vibrate. And I said, wow, that's unusual. And I asked her, I said, have you ever had experiences like this before? And she said, yeah, when I was a teenager. And I said, well, what happened? She goes, well, when I was 13 or 14, I was really having a hard time with my parents. She admitted I was trying to like, I was going wild, and I was just being difficult, and I was having a lot of fights with my parents.
Sure.
And I had stuff that started flying around my room. And then I looked at her and I said, well, is there anything going on now? She goes, well, me and my husband have been having a lot of problems, a lot of fights. I'm thinking to myself, this is not a ghost. This is you. This
Yeah.
is how she handles the stresses of arguments. Okay, she's putting out energy, And a lot of times you see it like, when they have the poltergeist cases where you have a preteen or a teen in the house, and you get all this displaced kinetic energy. Well, she was kind of doing the same thing. She was in her 20s already. She wasn't a teenager, but it was when she told me that I was thinking to myself, you know what? Because I even asked her, I said, well, prior to this having, this problem with your husband, did you guys know? It was a pretty newer house, and no. And I was like, I bet you anything, you are the source of this. And this,
Right.
there's no haunting going on here except what you do when you get really stressed out. So, yeah, I know that sometimes it's not always supernatural, in the
Oh, yeah.
sense of a ghost, anyway.
Right. I've had read cases like that where someone has created their own poltergeist kind of thing. And yeah, that's interesting.
So sometimes it's even when you get a group, and the reason why I mentioned that is, despite when people say stuff flies across the room, I said it's not always has to be a ghost that can do that. People under stress can do that.
Yes,
It's
yeah,
extreme stress. Yeah,
exactly.
that's some, not everybody, but some people do that. Well, when you went to Savannah's another place, which I know is full of places to go, and a lot of those older houses though are private, so it's really difficult. And they've got that Bonaventure Cemetery, which is beautiful. That's got a lot of history in it.
Yeah.
But again, it's like sometimes gaining access to these places, especially after dark, is really, really difficult. And that's almost like a, that cemetery's got a lot of tourists running through it. So sometimes doing investigations on places like this, it's very difficult because you've got so much ambient noise. How about battlefields? I know in Kentucky,
Yeah,
there's.
Perry Battlefield. That's a good place to go.
And have you guys had any experiences at any of the battlefields?
Me personally, no.
Okay.
The other anybody else in the group, I'm not sure. I haven't done that as a group with any of them.
Because
But
I know that some of the reenactors sometimes, especially I guess since they spend so much time in these places,
yeah.
I've heard a lot of crazy stories from reenactors who,
Yeah, and I think now that I live closer to one, I think when they have one of them, I want to go up and walk around my recorder while they're doing some of this.
Yes.
Maybe hang out after night with them and see.
Yes.
That'd
Yes.
be interesting to see what
Absolutely.
happens. And
Absolutely.
get their stories, but like you said, I'm sure they got some stories.
Well, yeah. It's just by sheer coincidence they're there. They're there a lot of times. Like I said, you could go 30 times, and on the 31st time that you go someplace, you have an experience just because you're there all the time. And it's that's why I'm saying sometimes these shows that. They don't realize sometimes how boring paranormal investigations can actually be.
Oh my goodness, you're right. Yes.
When you're like, all right, this place is supposed to be haunted, right? Okay.
Yeah. But it's still, to me, it's fun.
Oh,
I
of
mean,
course.
not fun like, I'm going to jump up and down, but if you're in there helping people and stuff, it's just the excitement of you don't know what's going to happen next. If
Absolutely.
you go there and try to experience what the homeowners do, or a place like at the battlefield may experience, and the whole time you're like, you're kind of waiting, asking questions, and then to me the funnest part after that is getting back and looking at pictures, listening to
Oh,
audio.
yes.
That's
Well.
where a lot of your, it might be dead quiet, not no pun intended, but when you start listening and looking at everything else, that's when all the good stuff comes through.
And that's exactly the way it works, and that's what everybody's always hoping for, you know, that you're going to be there at that right time. And, you know, of course, I know that's why a lot of groups, they use those trigger objects, you know, hoping to, like, speed things along.
Yeah.
The only thing I have sometimes, you know, when you see these groups that they use trigger objects, don't get me wrong. I, like, for example, if you're at a battlefield, I understand that you why you're using certain trigger objects, because you're thinking, okay, if there's anybody going to be out here, it's probably soldiers. But you go to other places, and sometimes you could have an entity out there which might not have anything that you know of have to do with that location. You don't know if 100 years ago, and this is a for instance, you know, or 50 years ago or 60 years ago, you know, you had somebody that went and killed somebody and buried them in the backyard. I know I'm being like, you know, I'm using an extreme example.
Right.
And you might have somebody in that house who nobody has any clue or any idea, okay? Or they even have an object in the house, okay, that's got some type of attachment to it. And you might be using trigger objects which are triggering absolutely nobody that's there, because you really don't realize who the entity is that is there.
Right.
And that's when you get EVPs and you get these weird names or these weird phrases, and everybody looks at each other like, huh? What is that? You know? And you always got to leave what I call for, you know, all these unknowns, which, think about it. If, you know how many people sometimes they die either, they die unknown, or they're killed, and they get, don't get justice, or nobody ever finds out what happened to them. That's a good reason to be a ghost. You know, you want somebody to find figure out, hey, I died, or this happened to me, or, you know, this guy that used to live here, you know, he hit me with a hammer over the head and then put me in the backyard under that big tree.
The spirit boxes and stuff they got now, because you can hear real time. That way, if you're going in the wrong direction, maybe you can get something over the spirit box, or if you listen back to your recorder while you're there, that you know, might steer you in the other direction. That's why I think it's always good to have, you know, all kinds of different equipment and try different things, you know, so you can, you don't always got the exact history, like you said, even at residential. Sure. They know a little bit. I think you just got to try covering all angles, you know, children, woman, man, you know, it's stuff like that. You just got to kind of shoot all over the ball field.
Let me ask you, do you guys have any psychic or sensitive in the group?
We do.
So you cover that angle.
Or more sensitive, yeah. And when we use... And, you know, they're on the group. We don't use them as evidence, per se. We kind of like them to go through and maybe, you know, be like a spirit box or something. Just see what they feel and pick up, so we got a starting point. You know, maybe they feel like it's a female or a male or a child or an adult or something. And maybe what they're feeling is that's how we can start with our questioning or, you know, something like that. Yeah.
Right. It gives you like a little bit of a pointer, like, okay, either sometimes even to the point of it's negative, which I'm going to ask you the next question. Have you guys encountered what I call something really, really nasty in any of your investigations?
Again, I can only speak for myself.
Oh, of course. Go ahead.
And with them, me, no. Okay. Not that I feel was demonic or something. I've been drained at an investigation where I just felt drugged.
Okay.
Demonic, I just feel maybe it was something darker. You know, or just me. When I say darker, I don't mean like...
Well, and let me explain. Because I know that demonic thing, I think, is a little bit overused. When I say nasty, you know, sometimes you'll get entities, when they were living people, these were really bad people. You know, they're human. It's an entity. It's a human entity.
Yes.
But it's just that this person, when they were alive... were really bad. And of course, when they're dead, they just didn't become little angels. So that's why sometimes, you know, when you have encounters with them, it's almost like you said, either you have an energy drain or you get just like a bad feeling when you're around these entities versus, let's say, having a cold chill, okay, and you're thinking, okay, there's something around here. But sometimes when you come in contact with these intelligent hauntings, which are entities of people that passed away, and you feel the difference. You realize I'm in the presence of something that if this person had a physical body, who knows what he might try or she might try to do to me, because I'm not going to leave it only in the male thing. There's a lot of women out there that are pieces of work. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, because I myself have had that experience where it's almost like you know, if I was, let's say, in some place, you know, when you have your sixth sense, I'm in danger. It's almost the same thing. Like, you know, you're in the presence of somebody who maybe would do you harm if they could. They just can't because they don't got a body anymore. But you still get that feeling when they come in. And that's why I'm saying it doesn't have to be demonic, because, like I said, I think the D word gets way overused.
Yeah.
And that a lot of these darker spirits, and when I say darker because of who they were when they were alive, can be just as dangerous.
Yeah.
Than anything like that's non-human or whatever, scarier or whatever, you know.
So yeah, we've ran into some nasty things. Nothing non-human, I don't think. Now, do I believe in it? Absolutely.
Sure.
And I prepare myself, you know, before every investigation, because you really don't know what you're walking into.
Yes.
Am I a demonologist? By no means, but I've studied up on it.
Okay.
Read, you know, and try to get myself as prepared as possible. But, you know, first sign I think something's wrong, then it's time to pack up and bring in the big guns, you know. Go find somebody else that deals with it.
Okay. Do you guys have a group that you go to or that you refer, let's say, homeowners to, or somebody when you say, okay, like, exactly like what you said, this is, we're out of our depth on this?
Yeah. They work with the paranormal clergy.
Okay.
Bishop James Long.
Yes.
He's part of that, and you know, a lot of groups work with him, not just us. But you know, we, something like that, we give them a call, or if someone gets a hold of them, we'll go for them and check it out. But yeah, we do got people for that we can turn to for help.
Okay, great. And the reason why I ask is, I've heard of certain groups that sometimes when they do go into these investigations and they're in it and they realize, wow, whatever is here is a really nasty, and we're scared, they could kind of pack up their stuff and leave. And this poor homeowner is going, hey, wait, you know, and they don't like throw them a lifeline like, hey, look, we think that it could be something like whatever, demonic or whatever. We cannot do this, but we're going to get you in touch with this other person or this other group.
Right.
Who's going to help you out? So that, that's why I asked that.
Yeah, we leave no client behind.
Yes.
Now that they will be helped. I mean, as we're packing up and telling them we got to go, we're going to be, you know, telling them what we're going to do next. And by that next day, we'll have someone contact them. Yes, we're not going to pull out and just leave them, you know.
We might
even stay there with them a little bit. We're just not going to keep asking questions and trying to find out any answers.
Well, you know what I mean? Think about it. Can you imagine, you know, here you are, you're a homeowner or whatever, and you've called in a group and they confirm your worst fears. That's really horrible, nasty, and possibly demonic. And they're like packing up their stuff and peeling out of your driveway saying, good luck, see ya.
No, that would be terrible. But it does happen, I'm sure.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does happen sometimes. And, you know, they don't... like you said, if you throw them the information, if you throw them a lifeline, you know, they don't follow up on it, it's on them. But as long as they've got, and I know that nowadays there's, as a matter of fact, Bishop Long was at Scarefest. I saw him there a couple of weeks ago. And I know I've interviewed also a couple of groups that belong to the Order of St. Michael, that they do exorcisms. And a lot of times they go in there after a regular group has backed out and said, look, we, you know, this feels like there's something here that's really bad. And they'll go in there on behalf of bishops and everything just to verify. So nowadays, and I'm glad to see that personally, because, and I'm going to switch gears here, going into that area of when you do get into some type of really dark haunting, it could really destroy a family or a person's life if they let it go too far, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that there's groups out there that really truly know what they're doing, or in other words, have respect in the sense of they don't underestimate what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then,
any group that has that, I mean, should never, you know, like with us and the other people I know down in Georgia and stuff, they would still be in contact with that client and going over there when, you know, to help out with whatever, whoever you call in to help with the exorcism or cleansing or stuff. They should, someone from that group should be still with that client every step of the way, contacting them stuff. Never just say, you know, so-and-so is going to take care of you, see you later. You know, through the whole process, we will be in contact and helping if we can.
Yeah.
Through the case until it's done. So I just wanted to make that clear, where even though we hand them off to someone else, that we're still going to be there for that client.
And you know what? And you always get the people, and I've had them, that if they can, once you kind of like break the news to them, they pack up their things and they leave.
Yeah, it's nothing unheard of, though.
It's like, don't bother, we're leaving. It's like,
they don't care if they're broke, they're leaving the house and leaving. Going somewhere else. Yeah.
And the most you can hope for is like, I hope this is not attached to you and it's attached to this place, because if not, forget it, it's gonna go with you. But yeah, I've had people that for them, they get totally overwhelmed and they're like, thanks, but yeah, tomorrow we're gonna be looking for any place to move to.
It happens, yes.
So let me ask you something, Larry. Do you guys only work with clients there in Kentucky, or do you guys go outside of that area at all?
Yeah, we'll go into Ohio. We can go down to Tennessee if we need to. Yeah, I mean, we'll go. It's, you know, as long as it's not too far.
Okay.
But we do work with a lot of groups and can, like, if someone got a hold of us here, like, say, in Georgia, I know Ghosts of Georgia down there, that I can call them, groups in Tennessee. So, yeah, I mean, we'll go into Ohio and probably West Virginia and Indiana, because, you know, they're all pretty close. So, yeah, it's not just in this area.
Okay, that's great. That's great. So, anyway, I am putting links to your website here in the credits of the show for anybody that's in that area and wants to get a hold of you guys, so that they could visit your website and from there just contact you guys.
Right.
With whatever it is that they, you know, that they need to, you know, if they, you know, want to start a dialogue with you. And the reason why I say this, and I don't know if you've had this experience also, you know, you sometimes will get a client who will contact you and they're like pulling their hair out, whether it's on email or by phone. Oh my God, quick. And then all of a sudden it dies out. And when you're ready to go over there, they kind of have like basically backpedaled a little bit. It's almost like they're scared of having a group come in and confirm.
Right.
You know. So that's what I'm saying, to get it started, and then, you know, it's up to them.
A lot of people will change your mind as it gets closer. They'll get nervous about stirring up activity, and they'll cancel. But, you know, you can just call, get a hold of us for a consult if you just want to talk about it, or something you can do, like, you know, tell them to leave or something like that. Yeah, we don't actually have to come out and investigate unless you want to, but, you know, we can help in other ways, too, if you like.
Sure, which is great. In other words, if they've got questions, they can call you guys and over the phone and say, look, this is happening and I'm not sure. And you guys, in other words, can give them advice without having to go out there and do a full investigation. Because I know some people, they want help, but they're almost afraid that they're going to get their worst fears confirmed. Whereas before, they could kind of sometimes chalk it up to imagination, especially if it's not quite intense.
Yep.
But they're getting a little bit scared. But yeah, there's nothing. Or you get the other side, and I've heard of people like that unfortunately they think that if you call in a paranormal group, like, all their neighbors are going to find out. Like, you're going to roll in there with, you know, with three vans, with the ghost, your insignia on the side, and forget keeping it a secret. Like, there goes my real estate value, whatever, you know.
Yeah, we've had requests that not to wear our team shirts or something when we come. Yes. And try to be as, you know.
Discreet?
Discreet as possible, yes.
Yes. So I'm glad you got, you know what I'm talking about there, where despite what everybody thinks, not everybody wants to be in a reality show or be, you know, like, I don't want anybody to know about this.
Yeah.
Yes, it is more common than people think, because unfortunately a lot of these shows make you think that everybody wants to be in the middle of some one of these investigations, and there's a lot of people that not really. They don't. They're just at their wit's end at this point, and they're just like desperate to get some type of resolution, but the last thing they want is for their neighbor to be thinking, "Oh my God, the kooks."
Yeah.
But, okay, so Larry, thank you so much for the time that you've spent with me. I love it. It's fantastic. I'm hoping to recontact you guys. Like I said, I was there in Lexington only a couple of weeks ago or less. And it was like, oh, my God, I could come out here. I went to a cemetery in a small town called Georgetown. That's about 10 miles outside of Lexington.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, if this is just a little, you know, I mean, there was just in that area alone, there was plenty of places to go to. And I know that, like, every state, it's got its so-called haunted, you know, they've got Mackey's Music World, you know, that one. That's very famous. Yeah. Have you guys done that by any chance?
I have not. I've been in there, heading to another one, went in there for a couple hours, but not really a big investigation. It's pretty, the place is creepy, I'm not going to lie, for a bar, especially at the bathroom area upstairs.
Really?
But, yeah, they wouldn't let us go downstairs, but yeah, that to me felt like, yeah, really off.
Well, I went there like a couple of, as a matter of fact, it's going to be more, like 2014 I went, and our timing was horrible. It was closed. I mean, it was one of those days when we got there in the middle of the day, I think it was a Monday or Tuesday, and I was thinking, you know, sometimes some of these places, we just couldn't get in. I did speak to the lady that used to do the tours there she was a DJ, and then she was doing, at one point she did tours. And then when we got there, she gave us a tour of another place. And she told us at that point, she goes, I don't go in there anymore. I don't go in there. She says, I consider it to be very dangerous. I just don't go in there. And she was very sincere about it too. It wasn't like, she goes, no, I don't. She goes, she says that she had felt that a lot of stuff that was in there was non-human, and that she was scared for her safety, and she had heard of other people that had gotten really bad attachments from whatever was there. And at that point, which was 2014, she was not going in there at all, period, for nothing. She says that little by little, she had scaled her investigations to before it, towards the last time it was like if you had to be a group, and she went in there with you, and by the time then she had just totally stopped. She was not even going in the building, period. She did not want to go in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind talking to some of the locals from Bobby Mackey's, or not really local, but regulars.
Yes, exactly.
People have experiences when they leave there. I mean, some of these people are spending a lot of time in there drinking. Yeah, I would think when you get, you know, a little intoxicated, your defenses go down, be easier for an attachment. Mm-hmm. You know, it follows them home, messes them for a little bit, and then goes back. I mean, if the place is that haunted and, you know, that evil spirit's in there, then, you know, I would have to assume a lot of people were having attachments or at least experiences in there.
And that's the thing. She, you know, her name is Wanda, and I mean, she's very well known because she's appeared on a few shows before, especially when it was first getting, you know, a lot of attention. And, you know, when we spoke to her, it just so happened she gave us a tour of some other place, and we were the only ones there, so we had a great opportunity to talk to her. And I asked her, I said, look, we went by there and it's closed. Can you tell me? She goes, I don't go in there anymore. So I said, why? She goes, no, I just, whatever's there is so negative that I fear going back in there. I don't want to go back in there. And I looked at her, you know, and I was like, is she joking? So she was really serious about it. And so, I mean, you never know. And you made a good point. Sometimes when you're a regular at a place, just because of the sheer amount of times that you go in there, you start picking up on stuff. Whereas somebody that goes in there, like you said, maybe somebody that goes in there maybe once or twice because they want to check it out.
Right.
I don't know. I really don't know about that place. And there was a lot of other stuff that happened with that place. I was doing research on it, and a few years after Pearl Bryan was killed, which, by the way, her body was not even close to that. That's a whole nother story. There was a big bridge collapse. They were building a bridge right there on the Licking River, and there was a huge collapse of the bridge that they were building, and a bunch of men got killed. And this was like, I want to
Oh,
say maybe
really?
2 or 3 miles from there. I mean, there's a, and plus other things that maybe went on there during the time that it, I guess served as a nightclub. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sources that it could come. It was never a slaughterhouse, by the way. There was never a slaughterhouse there.
No, I've heard it was.
There was a slaughterhouse close by there, but that building never served as a slaughterhouse.
I'll be
And
darned.
nope. And
It's do research, yeah.
yeah, you do the research, but what I'm saying is that, I mean, I know it sounds so much more gruesome when you start talking, because I did a whole different show on the effects of spilling of blood, even if it's animals, like slaughterhouses,
Right.
and it's pretty bad. So, but when you that thing that you hear, oh, there was a, it was a slaughterhouse, makes it creepier. But even if you take that out of the pictures, enough stuff that happened around there that most definitely are the could be the sources of multiple hauntings, multiple non-human things, that could account for the experiences that everybody's had there, including that guy Lawson, that I think he passed away already. He was that caretaker that he used to live upstairs, and I think he was he they filmed his exorcism.
Yeah, okay, I did see that video.
I think he passed away a few years ago. I mean, there's plenty of sources where he could have picked up very close to that area on the Licking River. But yeah, it's places like that. Based on what she told me, without having gone in there firsthand, like you yourself said, when you went into that bathroom area, which I've heard that that bathroom, people have had experiences, men have had experiences in that bathroom.
Yeah, I believe it. It was a different feeling there.
The kind you don't want to experience again, I take it.
I'd like to go in and investigate it, but it's just, it was just an odd feeling. And I'm not a psychic or sensitive, but
No.
everybody, I think, to a sense, can feel if something's wrong. It's instinct, gut
Sure.
feeling. So, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a matter of fact, like I said, let's face it, when a man who's going to the bathroom, men aren't looking to have a supernatural experience when they're going to the bathroom.
No.
They're just going to the bathroom,
Yeah.
and when you
I just
start
want
getting
to
a,
get
when you're getting a feeling like that, it's like, talk about the one place, So yeah, believe it or not, to me that adds like a lot of credibility when I hear stories like that. Because of all the places that you could have an entire building that's supposedly haunted, the one place that you don't think, or that's one of them. That is absolutely one of them. So, Larry, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. And like I said, I am including a link on the credits for anybody that wants to contact you guys, the Bluegrass Ghost Chasers, if they need help or just have questions in that area.
Yes, that would be awesome. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Take care and have a good rest of the weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I wasn't kidding. I just came back from Scarefest. That was in Lexington, and that was great. And I mean, I was there for the show, obviously, so my time was limited. And there were so many places that I would have loved to have done more investigating. I mean, I did some for the Lexington Cemetery, and I did a couple cemeteries. And the problem nowadays with going to a lot of these cemeteries, which is like, how obvious can it be? You might catch something supernatural of all places, is that a lot of these places are closed at either sundown or 5 or 6 o'clock. The problem being that, unfortunately, people vandalize the cemetery grounds or the headstones, so it's you can't just access it after dark, or if not, you need special permission. And in other words, you need time to prepare for it, something I didn't have. But anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And And you could tell, Larry is, you could tell he's a very down-to-earth person. And when I hear somebody like this talk about experiences they've had, you could tell that he probably goes through a three-page checklist of what it could possibly be before he starts admitting in his mind, this is paranormal or this is supernatural. And I love people like that because for them to actually put it in the column of this was a ghost or whatever, they don't do that easily. They don't. And you could tell he does not do that easily. And also that thing that he said about that feeling that he got at in the bathrooms. And I wasn't kidding. Men sometimes have a hard time admitting to it, much of all places in the bathroom. And it makes you wonder what went on in that building. I'm still doing research on it, and I'm going to do another show on what does the true history of Mackie's music, what is the reality of it? And a lot of people think, well, are you trying to disprove the hauntings? And I'm like, no, on the contrary, the research I've done so far proves that God, there could that place could actually be haunted or even infested, which is what a lot of people claim, with something that's absolutely, the only thing I'm saying is it's not the usual suspects. It's not what people think. And I'm going to give you a good for instance. As you know, one of the main things going on there was the supposed satanical worship that Alonzo Wallings and Jackson they had, and that they had cut off Pearl Bryant's head and dumped it in the well, and her head was never found, blah, 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 blah. The truth is that during the investigation into that murder, there was never, ever, ever any talk of devil worship. There wasn't. This just came in after the fact later on. Matter of fact, it was around this time, they had some pretty horrific murders, which was Lizzie Borden, Jack the Ripper in London. I mean, and like I said, she was killed about maybe 3 or 4 miles away from where this place is at. As a matter of fact, it was near a fort. And when they found her body originally without a head, they thought that she was a loose woman who had had a bad encounter. And, this was, remember, this was right before the turn of the century of the 1900s. And they weren't alarmed about it. I mean, yeah, it was a gruesome find. And what they thought of was what the original intent of beheading her was, which was to make it difficult to identify who this person was. All right. Later on, when it became known that the beheaded girl, because she had that little tiny foot, and there was a local a shopkeeper who sold shoes, and he was able to identify the boots she had because they were so small in size. That's how they were able to identify who the body belonged to. Once it became known that Pearl Bryant was this country girl and not some floozy, then all of a sudden it took on different dimension where everybody became alarmed, and from there it took on a life of its own. Okay. And of course the head was never recovered, even though at some point one of the bartenders think that this guy had carried the head around his satchel. And I'll do another show about that. And when you look at all the facts surrounding it, it almost looks like Pearl ended up getting killed because she was pregnant and the guy didn't want to marry her, which I still don't understand because supposedly her family already knew him, approved of him. As far as they were a pretty well-off farming family, I don't see why he would marry. He was studying dentistry. It wasn't like, and what ended up happening, at some point it leads you to believe that she lied to her family about going in, and what she was supposedly going in was to have an abortion. Okay, because the other guy involved with this had already done it to another girl and had been successful. There's a lot of unknowns, which is, did they try it and it didn't work? Okay, or did she change her mind? She was about 5 months along. What's gruesome about this is that they discovered that he basically beheaded her while she was still alive, which is pretty awful. But what it looks like more than anything is that he just didn't want to marry her for whatever reason. And he didn't want to have a baby with her. And let's face it, she was from a good family. And he was probably thinking, her dad is going to come with a shotgun and is going to make me marry this girl. And that seems to be the main reason why he ended up killing her and the other guy with him, just because he was aware of it. And he got dragged into it as an accomplice. And it's a very interesting case. But anyway, that being one of the main hauntings attached to Mackie's music world, not really. But there's a lot of other things that could account for it that are just as dark. But anyway, guys, I hope you like the show. You subscribe to my channel, hit the like button. And I'm hoping you guys will be coming back. I have a lot of interesting shows, you know, from places I've traveled to, some investigations that I'm doing for myself firsthand, other people I'm interviewing, and I hope you guys like it and you come back. Thanks so much.